This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. And in the case of the Sky Bet Championship, it's like Fulham never went away. Two consecutive wins on their travels in 4 days with a 7-2 aggregate score and the freakiest Aleksandar Mitrovic deflection while falling over to get their goal fest underway. In Sky Bet League One, 3 games in and only Portsmouth and continually reviving Burton Albion have maximum points. And in Sky Bet League Two, Bradford City record crowds of 17,264 and then 14,257 in their consecutive home games and treat them both to early season wins. It's the official EFL podcast. So, in the Sky Bet Championship, Harrison Burrows and Sarriki Dembele both scored Peterborough United's goal in both of their two consecutive home games this week. In the first, in injury time to earn a dramatic win against Derby County, and then in midweek, before surrendering a two-goal lead to draw with the salmon-kitted Cardiff City. Coventry City's Victor Gyökeres notched one with his face to earn 3 points at Blackpool, and Bristol City earned their first league win since March at Reading. In Sky Bet League One, there was a time when football club owners slipped discreetly into the boardroom, but after their struggles of the past few years, Charlton Athletic needed a visible figurehead, and when Danish entrepreneur and inventor Thomas Sandgaard arrived last September, that's exactly what they got. And my eyes immediately, Thomas, as we do this interview, transatlantic, are drawn to the shrine behind you on your office wall, encapsulating, well, I think probably two of your prime passions, isn't it? Because there's a there's a mite of football there that the Football League obviously use, and then behind you is your flying V as well. When passions collide, huh?
That's right, yeah. I love playing music, and obviously I have a huge passion for football.
Yeah. I mean, the point I make, when you took the club over, it was at a pretty low ebb. The supporters had taken a bit of a battering with everything that went on. Were you very conscious of the fact that you needed to lead from the front and be there for them?
Yeah, I think it became evident already during the negotiating phase that this was a club that's been in bad shape for nearly a decade. And with that obviously came that we needed to rebuild the squad from scratch already during the last few weeks of the transfer window, 11, 12 months ago. And also in terms of the back office, the rest of the organization, that he needed a very hands-on approach to be able to undo some of the habits that they were just being used to under previous ownership. So I think here in hindsight, the fact that I took a very hands-on approach to the ownership is long-term will probably prove to be a good thing.
Yeah, but of course I'm curious about the fact that you're based in Colorado. You are on the other side of the pond. You have a huge business. Remind us what it is that the business actually does, please, Thomas.
We make medical devices. We have a division that where I've invented devices that's used for monitoring in hospitals, and I've also invented devices that's used in the other division for pain management, rehabilitation, after strokes, incontinence treatment, etc. So those are two divisions that are doing very well.
So they're mature businesses where you've got your CEOs in place, or what do you call them over there, vice presidents, presidents, etc. place. Yeah, yeah. So you can leave that business to an extent to the others that you've already got in place in order to concentrate on your football club.
And like today already, up until this point, I probably spent 3 hours on Charlton today, and I'm frequently back in London dealing with things on the training grounds and obviously at the stadium where we have our offices.
Thomas, what was this itch that needed to be scratched in owning a football club?
Well, it has to be sparked by something, because it wasn't something I was involved with before. But a good friend of mine in Los Angeles asked me just over a year ago, have you ever thought about owning an English football club? I'm like, no. Well, why do you ask that question? Well, he was working with an attorney in London because he had made an investment in England and was using this attorney to sort things out. And the attorney had pointed out this opportunity up next to Manchester, a club called Wigan that was going in administration, and there was all kinds of opportunities there. So he got me interested enough to, let's give it a try. So I started looking at other clubs. Sunderland was one that came up, Charlton and a few other clubs. And Charlton just checked all the boxes. I managed to get a deal with everybody, and it all came together.
Yeah. I have to ask you how immersive football is compared to your other businesses and all your experiences in getting to this point. I mean, I'm guessing it's just all consuming.
I would say before I started my medical device company, Synex in the United States, that's 25 years ago, most of my business experiences were in very large corporations, mostly at a higher level, dealing with corporate politics, mergers and acquisitions, integrating workforces, and basically playing a lot of politics. Those experiences from my younger days really, really came in handy when I was dealing with this. I don't think I would have gotten through it without being able to take a very relaxed approach to some of the negotiating here.
And how does it feel to have been in the saddle for, approaching a year now? I mean, and let's be honest, one of the most complex years that the world has seen in many a moon.
That's right. Obviously, with COVID around, it's been tough. Lost a lot of money. A lot of other football clubs did that too. So that's just a fact of life. But it's been exciting. Coming from a very poor position at the beginning of last season to ending up just with the goal difference to make the playoffs was very exciting, and also proved that we can definitely get there.
Yeah. I mean, I talked about your visibility, and you were very visible before the Sheffield Wednesday home game of the season with your fabled axe, your fingers running up and down the fretboard, and you were, playing Addicts to Victory, a song that you have contributed to the repertoire. What kind of stuff are you into, Thomas, music-wise?
It's what you consider classic rock, like the song you heard that's now available for Charlton's fans to enjoy. It's classic rock. I have four more songs that are hopefully coming up here in less than a month. We'll get that out on Spotify and Apple Music as well. And I probably have 20 more in the works. So when you grow up with classic rock, you still have the urge. And it's good that I now have the opportunity to get back into it. And I'm probably not the most musical person. I don't have the perfect ear or perfect pitch, but that's probably helpful in terms of I can relate to what most people would like to hear instead of being technically a great musician that just plays very complicated music. And sometimes people don't appreciate that as much as something that just resonates with them more easily.
Well, listen, I did. I thought your fingers were moving extremely fast. It was like watching Angus Young out of AC/DC or somebody moving up and down that fretboard. And are those the kind of classic old school bands you're into? People like Kiss, AC/DC, Def Leppard, etc.
Def Leppard, Journey, that kind of stuff. Borderline, Metallica, maybe not as heavy hitting as Metallica, but in that spectrum, yes.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to hear.
Yeah, quite. I mean, I want to say this kindly. That's quite razzmatazz for English football. Do you think, on the other hand, that the UK could learn a lot about the way in which the US does sport?
In the US, they are very good at commercializing and engaging the fan bases. In a lot of ways, the model, the business model is different from what we know in Europe. And I'm not sure it's the right thing to do. For instance, like there were talks about creating the Super League, which would be similar to the NFL and NBA, etc. in the US, and just benefit a few clubs. In the US, you have a feeder system. The whole college world and high school is is the feeder system for that. So it kind of works in an isolated basis, just in this country alone. There wouldn't be a feeder system for the Super League in England or Europe, I should say, that they were thinking of. So I think the whole pyramid of football would fall apart had that been implemented. So yeah. I'm glad that we can keep the system. I think there's much more that can be done to engage fans, which is partly what I do since I got involved with the football. And I learned a lot in the first few months, even before I owned the club, in terms of how much there's a need and a thirst for being engaged as a fan. And I also think that because football is so popular all over the globe, and English football in particular, that we and maybe the whole world of football can do to engage and attract an international fan base. So that'll be one of the things we'll be focusing on in the future.
Yeah, and to clarify, I was not for one second suggesting that England could learn from that Super League proposal, which was obviously heavily condemned, but certainly the commercialisation, and I mention it because obviously there's a huge deficit for English football clubs across the board. So anything that can sweat the assets, monetise and bring revenue into football clubs has surely got to be looked at, which is what you're saying you're currently doing. You're going into every nook and cranny, to use a very British phrase, to see if there's any areas you can exploit.
That's right, and I can tell you that we have doubled the international fan viewing on our Charlton TV, as we call it, a fairly high level streaming service to mimic, for instance, Sky Sports events, etc. So we have doubled the viewers there, and we have big plans to expand that all over the globe.
Thomas, just bear with me, because elsewhere in Sky Bet League One, it's still nil points for Shrewsbury Town, Doncaster Rovers and Fleetwood Town. Freshly promoted Cheltenham Town and Bolton Wanderers notched up first wins, and so too did the new MK Dons manager, Liam Manning. What's the sort of medium-term strategy, and obviously you'll be aware of the fact that English football has a very short-term culture. What's the plan over the next 2 to 3 years? That's what I mean by medium-term, Thomas, please.
Obviously, to slowly and in a structured manner build us up to have to be a competitive team in the Championship. And with that as a platform, we're obviously aiming for a presence in the Premier League, but one thing at a time. And I'm spending quite a bit more on the player budget this year compared to last year. That should, in itself, with a good manager, should put us in a position for promotion by the end of the season. We're off to a rough start, and hopefully we can catch up after that throughout the season.
I'll look forward to it. And maybe next time I can tempt you to get that fine axe off the wall and give us a few of your favourite licks. Lovely to talk to you, Thomas.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Appreciate it. You too.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Tate.
In Sky Bet League 2, at the time of recording this week's official EFL podcast, only Forest Green Rovers have maximum points after three games. Having missed out in the playoffs last season in the summer, they appointed England's under-16s head coach Rob Edwards as their new manager. And first things first, Rob, quote of the season so far from my point of view. You were asked what you'd learned from your first game in charge, and you uttered the magical words, not to wear chinos in the technical area. You'd had a bit of a soaking, had you?
Yeah, we got drenched. It was like, you know, first game of the season is supposed to be red hot, isn't it? And it was far from that, Clem. So we got soaked, and I had my nice blue chinos on with my white trainers, and it was actually club attire, believe it or not. We've gone for it with some nice super dry stuff this year, and so it was club wear. But yeah, I got soaked. So That was probably my biggest learning so far.
had you given them a little run through the washing machine, or did the blue dye, not that I'm slurring Superdry's products, but any blue dye on your legs afterwards, or were you okay?
No, as good as gold. They were great. They held up well, just very, very wet.
Yeah. Do you find that football over the years, and obviously you've worked at all sorts of different levels, do you find that football needs personality in the modern era like that? You know, somebody that is prepared to be real and have the sort of issues that affect anybody in the world?
I think the way I want to be, I've spoken to a lot of people and taken a lot of advice when I took this role on, Clem, and they just said, be you, you know, and I think everyone was, you've got to be you, you've got to be honest, you've got to be believable, you've got to be authentic. And that's what I'm trying to be. So, you know, there'll be times where I might say the wrong thing, but it's only out of just being me and trying to be honest. And look, I'm never going to upset anyone. I'll be genuine and I'll be nice. But I think you've got to be yourself. And there's nothing wrong with having a bit of personality. I think that's what football's about as well, and sport's about, isn't it? And people want that. They want some character. They want to see, you know, they want to have a laugh. They want to enjoy it, and they want to be entertained. And yeah, it's about personality. The best, the most, you know, go back all the way back to Brian Clough and people like that, can't you? People talk about him. They're going to continue to talk about him for another 100 years and more because of how talented he was, but him as a personality. And there's been God knows how many more since then as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to try and make sure that this was not a dying old school skill, that there were people that still had that character. So I think it's important. I think probably there's a breed of young coaches, and you'll have seen them in your previous role, and when you've been fortunate enough to be at St George's Park, where I'm actually talking to you from now, who do like to hang on to the clipboard and do like the nice tracksuits and all the rest of it. But listen, it just tickled my fancy, and that's why I thought I would mention it. How nervous were you, are you, at stepping out into the murky world of domestic league management?
Yeah, I was, and still am, yeah. I was nervous. The first day, that was an incredible feeling, though. You know, walking out in front of our home fans and having fans back in the stadium was brilliant. And I know we might get to that maybe in a bit, but that's what it's all about. And they've been so supportive since myself and Richie Kyle, who's coming with me, have joined the football club. So that was brilliant, walking out into the pitch and that they were with us, and that was great. And my nerves just went then. It was just pure excitement, and we were ready to go. Come on, let's go. But then I think, you know, as soon as one game goes and it's on to the next one, the nerves come back again, and you just, you know, you go through, you repeat that feeling and the roller coaster. And you know, it's been, what was it, 10 days since Sutton, since that first game. We've had four games.
Yeah.
So it's been that feeling four times already. Yeah.
Is that, I mean, go on, what share with us? Is it the same sort of nerves that anybody would have when they're building up to a big occasion? The little chatterbox sowing seeds of doubt? Is it the fluttering of the stomach? How does nerves affect you?
Yeah, in a similar way, to be honest, as when I was playing, actually, funnily enough. So I can get a little bit, I won't want to eat loads. I won't want to eat loads. And then I can get a little bit, like, I feel it in my legs. So, and yeah, the butterflies in the stomach, but it's a strange one. It really is. It's hard to sort of nail it down. It's just a... but I can only liken it to how I felt before a game, before a big game, you know, as a player as well. But I think it shows you care. I think it shows that it means a lot to you, and there's nothing wrong with it. And as soon as that first whistle goes as well, like, bang, you're in the zone.
Yeah. In the legs, you used to feel it.
Yes,
disgust.
I know. And that's
what, wobbling were they? Were they fluttering?
It's funny. You know, you see the butterflies in the stomach. So I'll get that, but then it's just I can feel it in my legs. I can feel sort of like a, I don't know, it's almost like, not a tiredness, but it must have been my way of coping with nerves as a player. Almost to like, and I, you know, got to try and wake them up. You know, you're giving them a whack. Come on, get your legs going, Rob. You know, that's what, and you need them really to play football, don't you? You sort of need
your
legs.
Yeah, I would have thought so.
And, yeah, I still feel those same sorts of nerves now. Funny, it's strange, really, but it's just, I suppose, my body's way of dealing with it.
Yeah. I love your career path in management so far, you know, Wolves under 18, stepping up a bit to help with the senior team, off to Telford United, back to Wolves with the 23s, and then obviously with this dual role at England, actually, haven't you? Under 16s, yeah. Head coach, but also assistant to the under 20s. Have you been building up to this point, though, Rob? Was this always the objective?
It was, Clem. I mean, And you know, it's very, very early days, isn't it? So, you know, I want to have some longevity in this. Of course I do. But this was the plan. And you never know how you're going to get there, because I clearly wasn't a Steven Gerrard or a Frank Lampard or Wayne Rooney and didn't have that kind of career. And by the way, they deserve everything they get. You know, they get those opportunities because they've done fantastically well. And it's great to see them doing well in football management as well. But I wasn't at that level. So you're never going to just go stepping straight into something. So you've got to try and work hard and find another route. I retired at 30, and it was through injury, but also the fact that I felt right. I can get a head start on people now. I felt like I could try and get ahead of the game. The people my age who are going to want to go into this in 5-6 years' time. And I suppose this was the plan. I've had quite an eclectic mix of experiences now, and brilliant ones. Brilliant ones, working with some and learning from some fantastic people, you know, from the very, very beginning. And Gareth Prosser at Wolves and Kev Fellwell at Wolves, who gave me my first opportunity, my first job. But actually before that, I went in at Manchester City and shadowed Gareth Taylor, who's now the women's head coach. He was the under-16s head coach at City, and I was shadowing him, played for Wales with Gareth, so I knew him. Mark Allen, who was the academy manager at the time, was kind enough to let me go in there, shadow Gaz, and it was like almost like built up over the course of a year to being his assistant. But I was doing that, and then also going in at Wolves to practice as well there. And and at the end of the season, and I got offered a job at both places and went with Wolves under 18s role, and you know, very proud moment. And lots of different experiences, and I don't think you know how you're going to get the opportunity. I don't think you know when it's going to come. I don't know if you don't think you know when you're ready. But then you've just got to take it when it comes. And this one just felt right. But going back to the very beginning, I've wanted to do it probably now for about 11, this sounds a bit of a strange, but 11 years. So when I was involved in the promotion at Blackpool, so I was part of that squad under Ian Holloway when we got promoted, and seeing what he did with us as a group of players, getting us promoted. It was a team we were probably favourites to go down, by the way.
Yeah,
and coaching a group of players, and we were a tight knit group, and obviously we had some very talented players who went on to I don't want to say bigger and better things, but they went on and had fantastic careers as well. But being a part of that made me think, yeah, I fancy this. And then the year after, I wasn't good enough to play for Blackpool much in the Premier League. I played a couple of games, and I went on loan to Norwich that year, and then I was part of their promotion under Paul Lambert as well. So yeah. I had a couple of promotions in a row, and it just cemented it for me. I just thought, you know what, this is what I want to do. And I was about 27 at the time, so I got on my B licence, and that was when the sort of coaching journey began.
You've set that up beautifully, because, you know, you mentioned Paul Lambert there. You played under Mick McCarthy. You played under Simon Grayson, Ian Holloway as well. I mean, that's a lot of influences. I guess you take a little bit of lots of them and squeeze them out as part of your evolution.
I think you do, Clem. I mean, and going back even before that, Graham Taylor gave me my debut at Aston Villa. You know, wow. I mean, incredible. And to play under Mark Hughes and John Toshack with Wales. Really lucky to have worked under these great people, and a lot of international managers and fantastic, fantastic managers. And yeah, you do. And I think you take the little bits and then you blend them yourself, and you have to be yourself. I just talked before at the very beginning about being authentic, and you have to be yourself. But of course, you're going to learn what works for you along the way and maybe what doesn't. So I've been extremely lucky. For someone who... I was a very, very average player, but I've managed to work with and under some unbelievable managers and alongside some fantastic players as well. And I've learned a lot along the way.
Yeah, you're also very modest. Do you think playing for Aston Villa, Blackpool, Wolverhampton Wanderers, Wales, do you think that happens to average players?
Well, I think what I was is I was hardworking just probably good to have around. Rob will give us something. Rob will edit and kick it. And you know, look, I was around a lot of talented players, and I think you can sometimes put in one or two people like me who can be a bit of the glue and be around the squad and can be fairly reliable for a period of time. So, you know, I'm proud. Look, I'm very proud of what I did, and you know, without one or two injuries, then you never know what may not have happened. But I look back with a lot of pride with some of the games that I was able to be a part of and some of the experiences that I had.
You can have a great chassis, fantastic slick bodywork, beautiful chrome wheels, but if you haven't got the bolts to fix them to the axles, it all comes off the rails. Listen, this feels from a distance like a really good fit. It's almost been a mutual appreciation society when they appointed you. They said they'd appointed a coach at the cutting edge. This is the start of our next era. You said this club feels different, does things another way. I mean, listen, it's going well for you. It's the start of the season, but it does feel like you found one there and they have too.
Yeah, it does, Clem. It really does. People say, obviously, you've got to be careful and you've got to try and pick the right one, especially with your first job. There was not a doubt in my mind, and I left a fantastic job. I left a fantastic job at a brilliant place, a brilliant organisation, working with top players and learning from some brilliant coaches as well, and people like, you know, working with Lee Carsley, you know, who's obviously now the 21s head coach, John McDermott, who'd come in, a lot of people who were great. But this was, like I said before, something I wanted to do, but it felt right. They'd already given the previous manager 5 years, so they support the head coach or manager. They support him. They had a group of players that got to the playoffs last year, so they achieved something. Didn't quite get over the line, but we were able to. I felt right. Well, there's a core group of players there, so not loads needs to be done. It's maybe little tweaks here and there, and then with the you know, with Rich Hughes, who's the director of football, you have fantastic support, a great link there, someone who's going to really help me and take away a lot of the other things that go on, and I can concentrate then on working with the players and trying to build a real culture, get really good relationships going there, build a trust with the players and with the staff, and then try and get some organisation into them as well. And yeah, I felt like, you know, a lot of new first-time people coming in could be going into places fighting fires, and that certainly wasn't the case here. It's been very, very smooth. I felt a lot of support. There's a lot of good people here. So far, it's been great.
I mean, no interview with Forest Green is complete without assimilating the whole green ethos into the conversation. But it seems quite opposite at the moment after the sort of environment announcements of a couple of weeks ago. I mean, the club is clearly at the cutting edge and part of a new breed that does things very, very differently.
Yeah, we do. And everything from the how we eat, trying to, you know, obviously, you know, going forward, if you go look ahead of time, you know, they'll want to try and we'll be the first club with an electric coach. You've got no doubt about that. We've got electric minibuses now. You know, what we will put on our pitch to help everything grow will be, you know, it'll be vegan, basically. You know, everything that we do is slightly different. But the players buy into it as well, you know, Clem. And then we have to, because you come to this club, you know what we stand for, you know what we're about, and you have to buy into it. And that's what we do. So when you're around the club, this is what we eat, this is what we wear, this is, you know, these are the things that we do. And that's what our owner believes in passionately. And you know, he's the boss. And I think it's a fantastic. Do you know what? It's made me think more about what we do as well, genuinely, seriously as well now. So I will drive an electric car. We do think about how we eat, how we travel now as a family, because it's, let's be honest, it's, yeah, what you just mentioned there now, we know we all have to make change. It's inevitable. So
quickly.
Quickly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just out of curiosity, are you meat eaters at home, and have you been pleasantly surprised about the cuisine and stuff? I say this because me and the missus are trying to wean ourselves off as much meat as we possibly can. What sort of nice dishes have been served up at lunchtime? This is not meant to be a novelty question. Genuinely, I'm asking you, how creative is chef with vegetables and pulses?
Nah, very good. Very good. I think the lads are really on board. And recently, I think we've really tried to get it going even more. So, you know, they love that. They can have burger and chips on a Friday. Do you know what I mean? And then they're all over that, as you can imagine now. But there'll be a nice chili con carne. There'll be, you know, you can have your baked potatoes, your salads, your fruit and veg. So there's plenty of stuff, and we've got to make sure we get it down because the lads are working very, very hard. But you know that there can be a real positive to this as well, because you know it can help, it can aid with recovery, it can aid with energy as well. But it is very, very important that you do get it down you as well, because it's probably new for one or two people, and one or two of the new signings think, right, okay, I've got to get used to this. But you know, we're a couple of months in now and managing it with it very well. And the food, excellent. If you come to the ground, you come to the match day experience, the food's excellent. It's really, really good. You need to get down. I don't know if you have before, but you need to get down and try it if you haven't. It's excellent. Really good.
Well, what I normally do is come to do a feature, you know, at the club, and then I try and come just towards the end of lunchtime, then I can mop up the leftovers. That's my strategy, Rob, and I'm sticking to it. Elsewhere in Sky Bet League 2, Northampton Town also have maximum points but have played one game less than Forest Green. Their midweek trip to Newport County rearranged due to the refurbishment of Rodney Parade's pitch. Sutton United's midweek game was also rearranged for the same reason, and in their third consecutive season in the fourth tier, not having previously played at the level since 1971, pointless Oldham Athletic prop up the EFL. Is the next step for Forest Green pretty clear, Rob, to go better than last season?
We want to improve. What I'm saying, and when I talk outwardly about this, when I get asked this question, is we want to improve on last year. To improve on last year, we've got to go some, haven't we? Because they obviously got to the playoffs. Dale wants to see improvement in every aspect of the club and wants the club to continually move forward. He won't be putting major, major pressure on to say, you have to get promoted now, but he wants to see improvement. You know, so I think it's pretty clear where we do want to go, but I don't feel like if we don't achieve promotion this year, I don't feel like it. That doesn't mean it's not been improvement, if that makes sense. But there is a plan to try and get to the championship, and a realistic plan as well. So we do want to keep moving forward.
Mate, it's an absolute delight to talk to you. I'll tell you what, that Fegan's given you an extra zip, hasn't it? You were always a sparky character now, but I tell you what, a few extra leaves, you're almost popping off the ceiling. Great to talk to you.
Thank you, Clem. My pleasure.
That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Rob Edwards and to Thomas Sandgaard. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.